Real variety for your work day.
Really?
This is season 3 of the Fat Doctor podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Asha Lamy. We're going to be talking all things related to weight stigma, fat phobia, and fat activism over the next few weeks and months. I'll be joined by a host of regular guests, as well as some experts across the fat activism sphere. So all you need to do now is sit down, relax, and listen in. I posted on my socials recently that I was on the radio. Woohoo! LBC Radio. Those who don't live in the UK won't have heard of it, but it's Leading Britain's Conversations. I think that's what LBC stands for. It's quite a conservative radio show. I describe it as a mixture between, like, if you crossed NPR with Fox News, sort of, you know, talk radio, but kind of more Sean Hannity than whoever does NPR. Cool, I was doing so well there, and then I lost it right at the end. Anyway, LBC, Nick Ferrari in the morning. Nick's one of these people that just, you know, his job is to cause a bit of drama and to get the conversation going and, you know, to antagonize, that's the word I'm looking for, antagonize his guests. So I actually had a great time. I knew exactly what to expect. I knew who he was. Everybody knows who he is. He's actually, I mean, I don't know if he'll hate me for saying this, but he used the word a couple of times. So he's a fat man. we're talking about fat stuff. We're talking about fat children. And so, you know, I think there were bits that he could relate to, and we had a spirited conversation, and I said what I needed to say. I didn't back down. I didn't say anything I regretted, or didn't say that much that I regretted. And I thought we got along. I thought we had a little bit of banter. I loved it. I'd go back in a heartbeat to have these conversations. I'm not afraid to have conversations with people that don't agree with me and who share very different politics to me. And let me tell you, we share very different politics. But it was good. And I came away from the radio and I absolutely hated myself. This is quite typical of me. I focused on the bit that I, as far as I was concerned, got wrong. In the middle of a very spirited conversation with a lot of back and forth and question after, oh, but surely you're not saying this, that kind of conversation. He mentioned some guys whose name I think is Arsene Wenger. Now, I hadn't heard about this man until yesterday. I vaguely recollect his name being in the news like 10 years ago or something, but I don't know who he is. No idea. And so I sort of gleaned from the conversation that he was some kind of like athletic-y, sporty person. Go sports! But I don't know who he was. And so I kind of tripped. I tripped over it a little bit because I was thinking, I don't know who that is. And I don't want to admit that on live radio. So I made a comment about exercise and how exercise is not necessarily good for your heart, because that was the question I was being asked. Now, I want to make it clear that exercise absolutely is good for your heart. I'm not denying that for one second. There are loads of studies that suggest this. A little bit of exercise, absolutely fantastic. Your heart improves your heart function, irrespective of weight. So go for it. But there is some evidence that people who exercise excessively, excessively, I guess, is defined as more than 6 to 8 hours of exercise a week, although that's just an arbitrary number. Who knows if that's what they mean? All we know is that people who do a lot of exercise are putting some strain on their heart. So there are studies that show that they have higher blood pressure, that they have cardiac remodeling, which can lead to atrial fibrillation, which is a risk factor for stroke, and that they can sometimes have hypertrophy of the heart, so the heart's bigger than it should be. And there's even some evidence that links excessive exercise with sudden cardiac death. Very rare, but it's possible. So, you know, I always make the point when people talk about exercise, and, you know, he was talking about running around Leicester Square for 3 hours every day. Obviously, that's excessive exercise. So I often make the point, actually, exercise is good, but in moderation. Don't overdo it, because actually overdoing it could be worse, could be causing more harm than good. And we don't know because we haven't got enough evidence. That's the kind of conversation I'd like to have, you know, if it wasn't a 5-minute chat on live radio. So I came away thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get crucified for that comment about exercise. That's all I could think on it and think of. And also, who the fuck is Arsene Wenger? hate him now. Just spite, really. I just, whatever. Anyway, that's what I was thinking about. And for the whole day, I was busy doing other things. I've got loads of other things to do. And the Fat Joy podcast had just come out. We'd done a round table about the American Academy of Pediatric Guidelines. If you haven't listened to that already, please go listen to it. I will link it to the show notes because it's such a good panel. I can't believe I was allowed to be on that panel. I still I'm sat there the whole time being like, I can't believe I'm here. This is so exciting. Anyway. That come out, and you know, I'm planning for my masterclass that's, you know, next week, next Friday, or this Friday by the time this comes out. I was busy, but this show kept coming up. You know, lots of stuff was going on Twitter, apparently. I don't know, I didn't see any of it, I ignore it. But there was an article written, and friends were saying, oh, how did it go? And yeah, you know, I sent them a couple of links. By the end of the day, I had processed this 10-minute radio interview that I was asked to be on literally the night before, 8 o'clock at night. Can you be on the radio tomorrow at 8 in the morning? Yeah, sure, no props. So I have this kind of feeling like I completely messed up. But people keep telling me, oh, you smashed it. Oh, you did really well. Oh, brilliant. You held your own. And I kept saying, oh, no, I really messed it up. Didn't you hear that bit? And I'm like, ah, shut up. It's fine. What are you talking about? It was great. Chill. And then my good friend Cara, who has been on this show a couple of times, and you all know, Cara McBee on Instagram, very hilarious. They are one of a kind hilarious, as far as I'm concerned. They never fail to crack me up when we're chatting, unless we're chatting about serious stuff, which we were yesterday. They were coming back from a comedy gig, and I sort of sent them a text and said, "Hey, how'd it go?" And they replied, nah, it's okay. I didn't flop. Got some laughs. And I immediately said to them, like, why? Why are you saying it's meh? Surely I didn't flop and I got some laughs is like a standard a measure of success in a, you know, in a comedy situation. I'm no expert, but surely not being booed off the stage is a really good start. So we haven't, Cara's not done that many of these events, so they're doing really well. And that conversation made me realise, and a lot of what they said, actually, they're very wise and very able to kind of, they have a lot of self-awareness and able to kind of process these things. So we kind of processed our collective experiences of the day together. And then I came into therapy this morning with the same kind of, like, with this hanging sort of, not hanging over me, but in my head and in my thoughts. And I'm beginning to, and I'm just beginning, I have to say, to think that maybe, possibly, and I'm very anxious about saying this sort of on air because it will then be out there and I won't be able to retract it, but I'm thinking possibly that I might be quite good at this fat doctoring stuff. Possibly, not definitely, just possibly. I'm thinking that maybe I might be exactly the person who is meant to be the fat doctor. Yeah, let me explain. You probably, really, I don't understand. You are the fat doctor. I mean, like, it's just a name. And you're all right. But let me explain. I've talked a little bit about in the past how I didn't grow up in the nicest home. And I think a lot of people can grow up neglected, starved of affection and encouragement and support and love. And, you know, I think that's a very common experience for people. If you're not valued, if you're not treasured and you're not made to feel that you're worthy, often you grow up with feelings of unworthiness, right? Because you need, you're like, a child is like a plant. You have to water it and make sure it gets lots of sunshine and blah, 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 you know, in order to grow and to thrive. All that jazz. I didn't get the support that I needed growing up. And that's not something I blame my parents for. My mother is the, you know, the daughter of a Holocaust survivor. We tend to be a little, you know, prickly. There's a little bit of intergenerational trauma going on there. And her mother had her mother is schizophrenic and had a what they would have called a nervous breakdown back in the day, was admitted into a psychiatric hospital. My mother was taken away when she was really young and left in a Catholic orphanage at that, my poor Jewish mother in a Catholic orphanage for several years. And and afterwards, she was the main carer for her mother, who had been lobotomized. So not just mental health problems, but now lobotomized and basically incapable of caring for herself. So my mum had a lot of baggage. Wasn't the best mum when it came to emotionally supporting her, me, but, you know, it's not her fault. We won't blame her. It doesn't excuse some of the things that she did. She was very physically abusive. She was very emotionally abusive. And we made peace with each other a long time ago. I'm very lucky that she died 10 years ago now. But before that, I was able to, without even realizing it, because I didn't have the language or the understanding or, you know, or any of that stuff, but I was able to make peace with my mom and to reconcile everything that happened. And, you know, she died. I was by her side for the 4 days it took for her to die. I never left her side. And I was there, her, you know, when she took her last breaths. And she knew I loved her, and I knew she loved me. So that's the story of my mother. My father, unfortunately, is still alive. Yeah. Not that I wish he was dead. To be honest, I don't care either way. It's just that he gets to live and she didn't, and that pisses me off because it doesn't feel very just. My father is not a nice person. My father is a narcissist, and he'll tell you he's not a narcissist, but all narcissists say they're not narcissists, so don't worry, he is. The difference between him and my mum is that when I was growing up, I wasn't just neglected, or you know, my flower wasn't watered enough. Oh gosh, I remember that being some kind of analogy for sex. So this is an analogy for children thriving and growing. Don't think anything else about it, okay? We don't want to confuse the two. But like, my mum didn't nurture me and support me and make me feel loved and make me feel worthy. She did not do that. But my father, he was worse. How best to describe this? Growing up, I always had a sense of, I don't know if it was just fighting spirit. If I was like the orphan Annie, you know, like just a bit tough, a bit mean, like no one's fucking with me. And I had a lot of self-confidence with someone who really ought not to have self-confidence. And there were all these times when I was myself. All the times that I was myself, I had, my dad would often, how do I describe this? He would basically tear me down. That's the words I'm looking for. Sorry, I got distracted because someone's asked me for another TV request. Ugh. Fuck off. Sorry. You don't need to know that. Anyway, he would do this thing where I would be me. And, you know, 7-year-old me was probably just a little bit socially inept, as all 7-year-olds are, and would say things like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm smarter than you, to my older cousin. Not meant to be rude, but I was kind of smarter than her. She was making some obnoxious racist comment and I told her she didn't know what she was talking about. And she did not take too kindly to that because she's a lot older than me. She might not be making a racist comment. I just remember turning around to her and saying, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm much smarter than you. And she behaved as one would expect her to behave, and that was fine. But my dad was furious with me. And the thing that really bothered me about that was that he didn't think my cousin was smart. He thought she was an airhead. He used to say bad things about her all the time. He was always bad-mouthing her. But when I stood up to her, and I wasn't trying to bad-mouth her, I was trying to defend myself, and I was basically trying to put her in her place as a 7-year-old, but as a plucky 7-year-old, think Orphan Annie, he destroyed me. He made me feel like absolute shit. He did it in a way that made me doubt everything about myself. I thought I was smart, but he was making it very clear that I wasn't. This person that he often called an airhead or whatever, you know, all she's good for is like doing people's hair and nails, like, which was an insult, by the way. I don't think that's an insult, but he thought it was an insult. And then all of a sudden he's saying, how dare you say you're smarter than her? You're not. And I used to think I was smart up until that moment. And yeah, there was that kind of, you have no idea who you're messing with. Don't get too big for your boots. He'd always try to drag me down. And I look now I realize, because he did it all my life, I can remember 2022, the news, 2022, what am I saying? 2002, 20 years ago. The news was filled with George W. Bush, Tony Blair about to go to war in Iraq to find weapons of mass destruction. And I remember in that moment turning around and going, there are no weapons of mass destruction. This is bullshit. That's not what this war is about. Again, there was something in me. I'm no political expert. And when I was 20, 22, I definitely wasn't. And I wasn't that worldly and that knowledgeable. And P.S., this was prior to, you know, internet. You had to go to a cafe and dial up to get internet access. So it wasn't like Twitter was filling my feed with all sorts of information. No, I was just guessing. My gut feeling told me there are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and this is just a bullshit war. And my dad destroyed me. Once again, I'm 22 now, 22 years old, and he told me I didn't know what I was talking about. How dare you be so arrogant? How dare you? Who do you think you are? And again, he tore me down. He told me, I'm right, you're wrong. I'm big, you're small. I'm right, I'm perfect, you're useless. That was the conversation. I remember being so wounded by that, because I don't know what it was that rose up inside of me that just was like, nah, something's not right here. That was my instinct, but boom, tore it down. And well, we all know how that worked out. He never admitted it, of course. To this day, he hasn't admitted it, not that we talk anymore. But that's another time when he tore away, like my therapist used the word annihilated. He annihilated me in that moment. And there are many other moments. I can remember sticking up for myself once, because same cousin. I'd asked her, I was about 13 now, and I'd asked her for a tampon because I'd got my period in my grandmother's house and I didn't have anything with me. And she was absolutely horrified. You can't use a tampon. That's like losing your virginity. Now, again, fair play. In my culture, we have very different understanding and beliefs about reproduction, reproductive rights, virginity, you know, a woman's place in the home and blah, blah, blah. So when I asked my 26-year-old cousin for a tampon, she thought promiscuity, whereas I thought sanitary products. And so we had a conversation, a heated one. But I was really angry. Who gets to tell me what I don't do or don't stick in my vagina? Quite frankly, that's nobody's business but my own. I was just asking for a tampon. If you don't have one, then say you don't have one and give me a pad instead. But again, there was something inside of me that rose up that was defending, I guess, something that like now is obvious. But back then, people still walked around with those beliefs, right? You couldn't use tampons. Maybe some people still do. So here I was, maybe right in the very beginning of my social activism, you know, reproductive rights, you know, fuck that misogyny. Not that I knew what misogyny was. I didn't learn that word until I was much older. But there was a part of me, an instinctive part of me, again, torn down. And that has the story of my life. There's three incidents that I can think of, random ones that actually aren't that important, but I thought I'd share with you because they were kind of funny. Or I thought they were funny. My point is that I grew up, and I think there's a lot of us who are in similar situations, who grew up being undermined for who we are, not just for what we do, but for who we are. Because it's one thing to be told off for doing something that somebody else believed was wrong. Like, you shouldn't have done that. And, you know, parents sometimes, I'm a parent, sometimes I'm like, don't do that. And my kids are looking at me like, why? What's your problem? I don't want to have to tell you why I don't want you to do it. Just don't do it. I'm your parent. Just be quiet. Sometimes as a parent, that happens. Even the best of parents can be like that sometimes. And that, you know what? Sometimes kids need to be told to shut up. It's a good life lesson. But most of the time, I will say to my kids, I don't want you to do that because this is why. And Can we please have a reasonable conversation about this? One thing I will never do is tear my kids down for who they are. Oh, you're so ignorant. You're so this, you're so that. I will never tear my kids down for who they are, because you grow up into an adult that doesn't trust who themselves or trust who they are. You grow up into an adult that actually, it's not about self-worth. It's about really genuinely not believing in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, don't believe that you are right or good or capable or worthy of love, worthy of respect, then you're fucked. Because here's what's happened. I've realized, I was looking back, and this is what I was talking about with my therapist, and I think I'm going to coin this term eventually. Hear me out. My sister has always been the kind of person that people get on with, and she's always known how to, instinctively known how to, I don't know how to say it, to maneuver in these kind of situations and to sort of get people on side. And she's sort of, I always think of her as like a cat. She's a dog person, but I always think of her as a cat, this kind of like really sort of like slinky. You know how cats kind of like slink along and like purr, and then sometimes they tease you like, oh, I'm not going to give you my love. And oh, no, I am. You know, cats are very lovable. People keep them as pets. And even like big cats in the wild, you know, people love big cats. You go on safari and it's all about the big cats, right? And maybe an elephant. But yeah, I was never a big cat or a cat. I didn't have the instincts. I wasn't a dog. I wasn't like a lovable puppy that was like, oh, you know, love me. I wish I was. They're so easy to get on with. I love dogs. I was a rhino. That's who I was. I was a rhino. You know, like the horn on my head, just coming at you head first with that big freaking horn, butting up against things. I wasn't mean. Rhinos aren't particularly mean. I don't think rhinos harm people, actually. They're hippos. Hippos kill people, apparently. They're quite deadly, but I don't think rhinos do. Relatively harmless. But like, if you've got one charging at you with a big horn, like, you don't want to mess with that, right? They're not lovable. They're not pretty. Most people wouldn't say they were pretty. And you know, you go to the zoo, you'll see the rhino, you'll be like, oh, look, rhino, and then you'll move on. Let's go see the lions. Let's go see the tigers. Let's go see the cheetah. The rhino is there for you to gaze at. Big animal, you know, impressive, but moving on. And I guess growing up, I wish someone had told me, hey, we're all different animals and variety is the spice of life. And there's nothing wrong with being a rhino. Rhinos are really cool because of X, Y, and Z. But of course, they didn't say that. They said the opposite. So here I was growing up in a world that kind of loved cats, maybe dogs, maybe a couple of other animals, elephants, but not really big on rhinos. And so I tried to make myself a cat or cat-like, which is really hard when you're a rhino, right? First, you've got to get rid of the horn. And that's what I did for a really long time. I censored myself and I tried to shrink myself as well, because rhinos are big. And I tried to shrink myself physically, because I think that was the easiest thing to do, is shrink myself physically. If I could be smaller, I would be more desirable. I would fit into society better. People wouldn't be so affronted by my rhino-ish ways. So like, I tried to shrink myself physically, but also as a human being, I tried to shrink myself, be less me, more cat-like. And so I stopped standing up for myself and for others. I stopped trusting my instincts. I stopped voicing my opinions. I stopped being me. I tried very hard to be someone else for a really long time, to be that kind of big cat that everyone goes to the zoo to see, to be the one that everyone accepts, not even loves or cherishes, more accepts. I think that's what I was aiming for. Although, who doesn't want to be loved and cherished? But that's what I was aiming for. And it's only in the last couple of years, really, since I started my blog and then like started doing the work that I'm doing, that I'm starting to figure out who I am. It's not coincidence that I came out as trans like a year after I became the Fat Doctor. I have struggled with my gender identity since I was a baba. One of the reasons I didn't get on so well with this cousin that I'm talking about, it's not because she's a nasty person, she's lovely, there's nothing wrong with her, but she was really into like hair and makeup and nails, and like she was really, oh, she's gorgeous, she's still gorgeous, by the way, the most beautiful human being on the planet. Fucking hate her. No, I'm just kidding, Cass, if you're listening to this, I love you very much. But you know, she was beautiful and she was really into George Michael, absolutely adamant that he was heterosexual. I remember having a conversation with her about that, being like, dude's gay. Instinct, dude's gay. No, he's not. How can you say this? And he's Greek, and like my family are Armenian Cypriots, so you know, he was North London Greek boy. We're North London Cypriots. We stick together. Anyway, I wasn't into hair or nails, and it didn't appeal to me. It made my skin crawl a little bit because I thought that I was supposed to be into hair and nails, and my sister was really into it, and everybody else was really into it, and I wasn't into it. Something was wrong with me. Again, the fucking rhino sat in a room watching a couple of cats make themselves look pretty pretty and hating it. I didn't have that feline sexiness. Mm-mm. I wanted to be outside doing something else. I didn't even know what I wanted to be doing at the time. My whole life, I didn't start wearing dresses until I was in my 20s, but I forced myself to wear dresses because I believed that wearing a dress would make me more acceptable, palatable, less me, more what people want me to be. I used to have really short hair, but I grew it out, and I became the person people wanted me to be. And I was miserable, not just because of my gender and my gender identity, which of course made me very miserable, but just in general, trying to be someone I was not. It takes so much time and energy, and you hate yourself because you're constantly trying to get rid of the bits that people don't like. And like, you know, when there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of me, I get it. I'm a big personality. It was hard. But as I began, actually, it began with embracing my physical body. I was talking to my therapist about this. Like, it actually, when I first went to see her, my main issue was hating my physical body, like actually feeling quite suicidal because my self-esteem was so low. And I focused predominantly on what you saw on the outside, maybe because it was easier, maybe because I didn't understand it or know any better. But like, I couldn't look in a mirror. I was disgusted with my body. Now, I cannot imagine looking in a mirror and not loving what I see. I've forgotten what it was like to be disgusted by my body. This is only like 3-4 years ago, folks. Amy, my therapist, is the one who, I don't know how, I kept saying to her, could you remind me how we did it so that we can do it again, this time for the stuff inside rather than just the stuff on the outside? And she laughed. I didn't know what to make of that. But I learned to love my body, and I don't remember how it happened. It was just, we were just busy like peeling off the layers and just going and going and going. And then all of a sudden one day I looked up and I looked in the mirror and I was like, this is great. And then I started to get, this was around the time that I started to get into sort of the anti-diet movement. That's where it started. And then I started looking at like fat content creators, and I was looking at lots of other fat bodies, and the more fat bodies I looked at, the more I was like, fat bodies are great. Like, this is really beautiful. I'm really into this. And then after a while, like, fat bodies became the norm, and thin bodies I'd look at and be like, they look a bit odd. There's nothing wrong with them, but that's not what I'm used to anymore, because I know what my body looks like, and pretty much everyone around me has a similar body. And so, like, you know, I've surrounded myself with a whole bunch of fatness, and it's great. I love it. I bloody love it. I'm a rhino. Rhinos are fat. I don't give a fuck. So, yeah, I learned to love my body. Learning to love what's on the inside is a lot harder. But I can do it. I'm going to do it. And I'm starting to do it. I'm starting to get it. You see, when I was on the radio with Nick Ferrari on LBC, and we were going back and forth, and he wasn't making it easy on me, I was able to keep my cool, say what I wanted to say. I was able to smile, and we didn't argue. We seemed to part as friends. I've been invited back. I don't know if that was a kind of like, I'd love to see you again, or whether it was genuine, I'd like to see you again. It doesn't matter. It wasn't a don't ever come and see me again. It wasn't a fuck off kind of way. So that's good. I feel like we did okay. And, you know, even though sometimes I caught a lot of negative press or negative commentary or remarks or whatever, or basically people troll me on Twitter. That's what I'm trying to say. Even though that happens, I'm all good with it. Like I'm thick skinned like a rhino. And oh gosh, I've always been obsessed with wolves, but now I'm going to have to move into the whole rhino territory. This is going to ruin my whole aesthetic. My whole house is decorated with wolves. But anyway, they got thick skin, right? I'm sure they're soft in the middle, just like everyone else, but they got thick skin. And so I'm actually good at this stuff. I'm good at handling all the negative press. If I was more sensitive, maybe more feline, maybe I would struggle a little bit more with doing the thing. So, you know, what I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being feline. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying maybe that if I was trying to be more feline and less like me, if I was trying to be more like someone else, I would struggle more with the commentary. And also, like, I'm big and I have a very loud personality. I'm big on the inside and on the out. And my God, I have tried to shrink myself for decades, literally decades. I am done with that. And I'm not saying that in a whole kind of like, oh, don't try to shrink yourself for anyone. Hashtag, I can't even think of a hashtag. I'm usually good at hashtag, but I can't even think of one, you know, be yourself. No, that's not what I'm trying to say here. I am saying that I have been going through a very painful journey that has involved a ton of therapy, where I am slowly, 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 slowly getting to the point where I am realizing that I can trust my instincts and that I am smart. Maybe, like, you know, not necessarily like academia smart, who cares about that, but I'm smart. Like I you know, I'm not talking about IQ, but maybe EQ, maybe you know, emotional intelligence. Yeah, I have that. And I can be funny. What else? No, there's more. There's got to be more. Come on, at least five things. I'm quite creative, not like arty creative. I wish, I'd love when I see people doing art and stuff, you know, like you get into like a rabbit hole on YouTube or on TikTok, whatever, and you watch all of these artists doing these really cool arty things and you're like, oh, I'm so trying that home, but it doesn't work out. I'm one of those people, the ones that try it at home and it doesn't work out. But I'm creative in my own way and I love to talk, clearly. Here I am with my own podcast, like, among all the other people that have a podcast. It's not like there's another, it's not like we need another one, but here I am doing it anyway. And I'm getting better at learning to just be me. When I first started out doing the Fat Doctor podcast, I used to edit out every every like, every pause, every like is a classic one, but you know, and used to edit them all out. I don't have to edit them out anymore. If you don't like the fact that I use fillers, then you're listening to the wrong podcast. Like, fuck off and find another one. I am beginning to embrace myself more and more. And that's something that I want to see in more of you. And, you know, I love talking about studies and facts. I love talking about I'm so excited about my Wegovy masterclass. I'm really excited because I'm going to tell you all the facts that I read. I spent ages reading all these boring papers, and believe me, they're so boring, but I read them because I wanted to arm myself with the facts so that when I was trying to give people information, it wouldn't be biased, that I would be able to say, this is exactly what the evidence says. I'm not, you know, toning it down. I'm not cherry picking the bits that I want. I'm giving you the whole entire, like, all 10 studies, the whole thing. And I'm really looking forward to sharing that information. I like to share information in a way that's accessible, because, you know, academics make it so that you can't, you know, access the information. I think they do that deliberately. You know, it's like a small little world where they talk in a language that no one else understands. So I'm looking forward to this masterclass and being able to do that and explain things. And I'm all for that. I'm all for answering questions and helping people to advocate and, like, you know, seeing my clients one-to-one. Love that stuff. Just recently had some feedback from a client who said, you know, we basically worked together and come up with essentially a complaint letter, and which I had, we had written together, let's put it that way, but I'd sort of helped to frame it and word it in a way that I thought would be most effective. This person was being denied surgery for something that they clearly needed surgery for. We wrote this complaint letter together. They sent it off. It came back. They are having the surgery in the next few weeks, in fact, possibly even now. Isn't that amazing? I am so, like, I'm so stoked for them. Obviously, I'm stoked for them. But I just, like, I knew it was possible, but now I know that it's possible. And that just really gets me so excited. I want to be able to do this for more people. Every single person that's like, I'm being denied surgery until I lose weight. I'm like, well, we'll see about that, won't we? But I love all of that stuff. But I also feel like there's a part of me that also needs to share a bit more about me and stop being, you know, I've up until now, I have been kind of hiding certain parts of me, not trying to maintain boundaries and privacy, because that is really important. Like, I'm not going to tell you my life story and everything about it and tell you all about my kids and stuff. No, but I'm talking about sort of maintaining an air of professionalism. I'm here to share the facts. I'm here to write an occasional controversial tweet, but I'm not here to do anything else. No, I want to be here, and I want you to come on this journey with me, a journey of self-acceptance, which, you know, there are like probably 20 books out there that have that phrase in them, journey of self-acceptance. That's what I'm going on. Very cliche, doesn't matter. It needs to be done. This rhino needs to become a rhino. My therapist, right at the end, I was like, I'm feeling really good. Like, normally I leave therapy weeping, but I was like, this is like today, I'm on top of the world. I'm feeling really good. I'm ready to just, you know, get out there. And she said, yeah, go get your rhino on. And I was like, do you know what, that's sticking, with a hashtag in front of it, go get your rhino on, or something to that effect. That is what I am going to be doing in the next few months for me. Really, you are all basically part of my therapy process. But yeah, I think it's important for us as fat people who are going on whatever journey they're going on, who have, you know, who are who we are, because we've all got our own individual experiences. We've all got our own individual talents and gifts and, you know, kind of passions. And we can bring them all to the table. There's enough room for all of us. We bring them all to the table and we're like, this is who I am. I'm not going to try and be so-and-so or so-and-so, which I have been trying recently. You know, I'm not going to lie. When I started out on social media, I was like, I want to be like this person. So I'm going to follow their steps. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Where was I going? Yeah, I got, after the radio, same day, I got a TV request for a well-known TV show that I may or may not have been on in the past. And the TV, it was really odd, right? I'm literally sat in my pajamas, eating cereal. And I get this email, like, would you be willing to come on this show at this time? And, you know, we'll pay for travel and you'll get a speaker fee. And what did they say? Are you doing any other television appearances in the meantime? I'm in my PJs eating cereal. I'm like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? Why would it be going on TV? Like, this is not exciting news. But it turns out that I've made a bit of a splash, and I guess people want to meet Britain's most outrageous doctor. Remember that that's who I am. Hashtag Britain's most outrageous doctor. As named by the Daily Mail. And quite frankly, if the Daily Mail said it, it is true. So that's who I am. Britain's most outrageous doctor. And I guess they want to make a bit of a spectacle of me, you know. It was a bit of controversy. That doctor's always good for a bit of controversy. And it's good for publicity. And I've been on TV before. And I know that when I go on TV, A, I'm going to be reviled. And there's going to be a lot of negative press, which is fine. As I said, rhino, thick skin, ready for that shit. But also, as a very good friend and professional has said to me once, you kind of have to tone it down a bit when you go on TV, Asha. You can't go on just like yourself because you're a bit much. And that's okay, but it doesn't work on TV. And that was ringing in my head, you know? And so I'm talking to this producer and they're like, we just want to bring you on, you know? And I was like, for what? To discuss what? Like, what's this about? Well, you know, just to discuss your recent talk, like your recent conversation with Nick Ferrari on LBC. And I was like, huh, yeah, no thanks. I'm all good. And I don't know if he's used to being told no. Maybe he gets told no all the time. But I felt really good about that. I felt really, really good about that decision because, you know, in the past, I would have thought, okay, I'm going to take this opportunity. I'm going to make the most of it. I'm going to do what other people would do. What would another successful social media? Oh, God, I'm going to use the word. Oh, prepare yourself, folks. Influencer. Do in my situation. And I thought about that for a moment. And then there's a part of me, like I said, that's trying to be more authentically me that went, fuck it. I don't care what they would do. I don't want to do this. There's nothing in it for me. I don't need media exposure. Sure, I'm sure that's good for a lot of people and there's good reasons. And I'm sure someone could tell me that I completely fucked up. Why would you miss out on this opportunity? You're an idiot. You should have done this. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I knew in that moment that I wasn't going to perform Britain's Most Outrageous Doctor for anyone. Like I am Britain's Most Outrageous Doctor and I will perform Dr. Lamy whenever the fuck I want to and however the fuck I want to. I will be me as authentic as possible and I will learn to over time not just love me but respect me and also appreciate me and I will learn to validate me and I will learn to kind of love the person that I am and everything that comes with me one of these days. I'm in the process but I'm still not willing to compromise myself in the meantime. So all in one day I feel like, you know, it's a lot of like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, and then wait. But all in one day, I felt quite liberated. And I realized that actually, I'm a badass fatty. Trans fat, which makes me awesome. Because not all of you are trans fats. You only get to be fats. And like, we all know that trans fats are the worst kind of fats. So, ha ha. I'm a trans fat. Big personality, mouthy, bossy, occasionally rude, when I want to be. I inherited my father's ability to eviscerate people with my words. Like, my words are my sword. And unfortunately, I have the uncanny ability of perhaps wielding that sword. It's a dangerous sword to be able to wield, right? To be able to cut someone down with your words. I learned it from him and sometimes it's come in handy, but a lot of times I end up hurting people. So it's dangerous, but still it's me. I can't help it. That's who I am. It's because of the way I was brought up. I was brought up by a narcissist and it's, you know, no wonder that some of that narcissism has rubbed off on me. I don't think I'm a narcissist. No, I'm not a narcissist. I know this. Like, I've done the checklist many, many times. If I am, then, oh boy, I don't know what to say. But yeah, some of my dad's traits have rubbed off on me and I am who I am. I'm never going to be a cat. I don't even want to be one anymore. Like, the cats are cool, sure, but there's loads of them. Like, I'm quite happy being me. Join me in my quest to be the animal that I want to be. Like, do you have... not necessarily an animal. I just use the animal analogy because I was in therapy and I use analogies in therapy. But like, is there something inside of you that just feels like you've been trying to be someone else for so long because you were told that you were not okay? Not that you weren't good enough. Weren't good enough is one thing. That there's something inherently wrong with you, like all of you. Like, people took one look at you and just went, I don't like any of this. This is just not for me. The outside, the inside, like all of it, it's all wrong. Change it all. If that's resonating with you, if you're listening to this right now going, yep, that's oh gosh, Windows just buzzed at me. I hope that nothing happens to my computer. I'm really on a roll. Technology. Anyway, if that's you and that's something that you can relate to and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I have been feeling this way for a really long time and I don't want to feel this way anymore, then, you know, join me. like together, like hit me up on social media, tell me you listen to the podcast and that you could relate. I do check my messages, believe it or not, and it's hard because there's a lot of shit messages on there, so you know you've got to filter them through, but I do check my messages. Contact me, contact@fatdoctor.co.uk. get in touch with me, because I'm really interested in doing this not just on my own, but you know, in community with other people who really are trying to get to a place where they could just be themselves and love who they are and reject that kind of like change all of you mentality. Whew. Coming up on the Fat Doctor podcast, I have some really good plans to talk a little bit about exercise and not the dangers of exercise, because we're not going there, not for a while. I could get in trouble. But the kind of harmful, toxic environment that we often find ourselves in fitness spaces. I'm going to talk to a thin person, maybe more than one thin person, because it's interesting to get their point of view. I've already recorded a fantastic episode, which I just, Brie, if you're listening, I really want to put it out there. Every week I'm like, I'm going to put this out there next week, and then something happens and I end up podcasting on my own. But we're going to put that out there. I'm going to talk to fat people in the fitness space as well. And something I'm really looking forward to talking about. That may be next week. It may not be. I don't know what episode we're on. I have no idea what's going on here, folks. I can't remember the last time I posted on the Fat Doctor Instagram page. I am not making those. Oh, I used to make those like little, you know, those things that everyone does. Everyone with a podcast does those, like those pictures, and then they have like the 1 minute clips that they put on, and I've not managed to get around to doing any of that stuff. And again, do you know what? Let's get my rhino on. No, I'm not doing that. It's not for me. I have better things to do with my time. Sorry, peeps. Once again, if you want a podcast with like, you know, 1 minute sound bites a week in advance that comes out every week as planned, that is, you know, for most people are recording like 2 months ahead of themselves, right? Like I get invited to be on podcasts and like, will you be on a podcast? It'll come out sometime mid-July. I'm like, fucking mid-July. I am lucky if I remember to do something before the day that it is due to be, you know, to be shared. So I'm, you know, I'm just going to keep talking and you can listen, you cannot. Those of you awesome people that have been supporting me on Patreon, even though I have done nothing for you, literally nothing for you in the last few months, but you support me anyway. I fucking love you. You are how I manage to keep my electric on. I'm, as I mentioned last week, financially not doing great, folks, but I'm going to figure it out. I'm not worried about that. Like that's not a big deal. But those people who are supporting me financially on Patreon, fucking love you. Thank you. From the bottom of my heart, I'm going to start posting these podcasts as videos for you to see, so that it looks more like a, you know, a live than anything else. What else is happening to my Facebook group? Again, 1.7k, it says. That's like almost 2,000 people in my Facebook group. That's fucking awesome. Love you. You're an amazing community. I went on there the other day and was like, oh, I've completely neglected you. How's things going? Everyone was so nice. Take it easy, Asha. Don't worry about us. We're fine. I've got these fantastic admins, Rianne, Kate, Hazel, especially Hazel, who really has done so much work for me. My goodness. She's basically, she's like an elf, just does everything and never gets any of the glory. I love her so much. If you're listening, I love you, Hazel. But we need more admins. So if you're like a Facebooky type person and fancy being an admin, I'm a Facebook group, just send Hazel a message, because we could do with some more admins and more support. What else is going on? Well, obviously I've mentioned, I'll say it again, masterclass is coming up. Woohoo! It's gonna be amazing. Honestly, the buzz out there at the moment about WeGove is like bees buzzing. The WeGove, the Ozempic. like you're probably hearing it, maybe you're hearing it from your doctors. More and more doctors are pushing for it now, like, yeah, take this drug, it's amazing. And they don't, especially if they're GPs or like endocrinologists or people who don't, you know, people who don't, who work outside of quote unquote weight management, they're just like, yeah, take it, everybody should take it, it's great, you'll have to be on it for the rest of your life. No, the NICE guidance says you can only be for 2 years. Oh no, it's okay, you know, it'll be fine. Honestly, doctors have no fucking clue what they're talking about. They do not give you the facts. They do not know the studies. They haven't read the studies. I have. And like I said, I will give you the information. Not too much, because you don't need to be overloaded. Just enough for you to be able to go back to your doctor and be like, two fingers up in the air. No, thank you. I actually know the facts. Clearly, you don't. But yeah, so I'm going to be talking about weight loss drugs. We gave you Ozempic, Saxenda, Ozempic. We'll talk about why Ozempic is not a weight loss drug in a moment, in the masterclass. Please join me. I've tried to make it, I've priced it so it's accessible for everybody. I hope if money is a problem and you really want to join, but you can't afford it, email me contact@fatdoctor.co.uk. But yeah, come to the masterclass. You've got to start, like, registration is open. We've only got a couple of days before it happens, right? Because I'm putting this out next Wednesday. So yeah, so on this coming Friday, 2 days from now, if you haven't registered by then, unfortunately, you don't get to see it. I'm not going to you can replay it if you've registered and you can't attend live. Don't worry about it. You can watch the replay. But if you haven't registered, then you'll not get to see it. And you won't get to be part of this really special, magical moment where not only will I share lots of information about what we gave you, but I will also let you into a little secret that I've been holding on to for a little while. But I'm really excited to announce it. And I'm going to announce it there first. Teaser, no spoilers. What else? Oh, gosh, I ran out of steam. That's enough, isn't it? That's enough. Don't forget, you can consult with me, as I said. We're having some success. There's a couple of people now that have come back to me and said, like, you know, I've written this complaint, or I've done this, and this is, you know, it's been action, this is happening, that's happening, which is great. That's what I love to see. And people have been great about keeping in touch with me as well and letting me know how it's going, because that's so satisfying. Most people just have a one-off consultation with me. Some people come back to me and say, actually, I need to speak to you again, but most people, it's just literally the one-off. It is cheaper than any other consultation that you could pay for in the UK with a doctor. Like, I have priced myself lower than all other doctors because, you know, well, I don't know why. I probably need to talk about that with my therapist. But anyway, join me if you want to have a chat and you need help. You get an hour and a half of my time, and you also get like a complaint letter or a summary or something at the end of it. So you get quite a lot. People have had lots of nice things to say about it. I'm working through all the things in my head. Have I talked about everything? Yes, I think I have. It's been nice talking to you. This has felt like a real chat. I've got a lot of things off my chest. As I said, free therapy for me. Woohoo! But like, you know, if you want to get in touch. Maybe next week we'll be talking about fitness. Maybe we'll be talking about something completely different. That's the fun of it, isn't it? It's like a lucky dip. You never know what you're going to get. See you, folks. Have a good week. As for me, check out my website, www.fatdoctor.co.uk, for more information about what I'm up to and what I have on offer. Folks, creating and maintaining a podcast requires long hours and lots of cash to burn. I love this podcast. I love pouring my heart and soul into everything that I do, but it isn't always easy. So if you'd like to support me and the work that I'm doing, I have a Patreon page. All the details are available on my website and in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to catching up with you next week.